Radio Prague News.
A Czech court has rejected a government call to ban the far-right Workers' Party. The US president has denied reports he offered to slow deployment of a missile shield that would be part based in the Czech Republic in exchange for Moscow's help in curtailing Iran's nuclear ambitions, and Vietnamese citizens have asked to be allowed to remain in the Czech Republic if they lose their jobs, saying they can support one another. The Supreme Administrative Court has rejected a government proposal to ban the Workers' Party. The government says the small far-right grouping contains extremists and is attempting to subvert democracy. However, the court said the government had failed to prove claims of a connection with the neo-Nazi group National Resistance, or that the Workers' Party was trying to change the political system by violent means. The Workers' Party came to national attention last year when members fought with police after being prevented from marching on a largely Romani district in the town of Litvinov in North Bohemia. US President Barack Obama says he wants to work with Russia to resolve a nuclear standoff with Iran, but has denied reports he offered to slow deployment of a missile defence shield in exchange for Moscow's help. Washington has signed a deal with Prague on basing part of the defence system, a radar base, in central Bohemia, though the Czech Parliament has not yet voted on the matter. The New York Times reported this week that Mr. Obama had sent a letter to Russia's President Dmitry Medvedev suggesting he would pull back from deploying the missile shield if Russia helped stop Iran from developing long-range weapons. Speaking on Tuesday, however, the US President said the letter simply reiterated statements he'd made, saying the defence system was directed towards Iran, not Russia. Mr. Obama said obviously if Iran's commitment to nuclear weapons was lessened, there would be less pressure for or need for a missile defence shield. The Czech government has invested considerable political capital in backing the US radar base, which opinion polls have consistently suggested most Czechs are opposed to. Vietnamese citizens have asked to be allowed to remain in the Czech Republic if they lose their jobs. At a meeting with Interior Ministry officials, leaders of the Vietnamese community said they were capable of supporting one another in the event of being laid off, arguing that possible deportation was too strong a measure. The Vietnamese leaders said their compatriots would prefer to stay in the Czech Republic and do community service, for instance. The Czech government recently launched a scheme to give laid-off workers from non-EU states €500 and a ticket home. So far, around 550 people, most of them from Mongolia, have signed up for the programme, which is open to 2,000 foreigners in its first phase. Only 20 or 25 people from Vietnam have taken up the offer. The Czech police have deported 12 people after checking the papers of 4,300 foreigners in operations in a number of cities on Tuesday. They registered nearly 300 contraventions of the country's law on foreigners and levied fines of nearly 200,000 crowns, a spokesperson said. Police also handed out flyers with information about the government's voluntary repatriation scheme. A quick look at the weather now, and it should be grey and wet over the next few days, with maximum temperatures falling to about 5 or 6 degrees Celsius at the weekend. I'm Rosie Johnston, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Rob Cameron. Coming up in today's programme, Barack Obama's secret letter to Russian President Dmitry Medvedev makes waves here in Prague. Is the missile defence shield now dead and buried? The far-right Workers' Party escapes a banning order as a Czech court says it is not a threat to democracy. And the head of the Czech Doctors Association causes outrage with comments about female doctors. Also today, we remember Wing Commander Petr Uruba, the former RAF pilot who survived the notorious Colditz prison camp during the Second World War.
My passive resistance, I always was the last to run out when everybody was standing there. The German warrant officer who was supervising, when he saw me, he said, "Uruba, immer der Letzte, Uruba, always the last."
Stay tuned for another chance to hear that interview with Wing Commander Petr Uruba, who died on Sunday at the age of 92. All that coming up in today's programme. Stay tuned. An article that appeared in the New York Times on Tuesday has caused something of a stir here in the Czech Republic. Citing US government officials, the paper reported that US President Barack Obama has offered to trade a proposed missile defense system in exchange for Russian assistance in blocking Iran's nuclear capability. He reportedly did so in a private letter to Russian President Dmitry Medvedev. Christian Falvey has the details.
Obama is burying the radar, is how one Czech daily on Wednesday described the latest developments. Reports that U.S. President Barack Obama may be willing to give up on European missile defense, pushed strongly by his predecessor George W. Bush. The proposed system accounts for the stationing of a radar base in the Czech Republic and interceptor rockets in Poland. On Tuesday, Mr. Obama, after meeting with British Prime Minister Gordon Brown, addressed the claim by saying the defense system hinged largely on the threat posed by Iran. U.S. President Barack Obama on Tuesday.
What I said in the letter is the same thing that I've said publicly, which is that the missile defense that we have talked about deploying is directed towards not Russia, but Iran. That has always been the concern, that you had potentially a missile from Iran that threatened either the United States or Europe. And what I said in the letter was that obviously to the extent that we are lessening Iran's commitment to nuclear weapons, then that reduces the pressure for or the need for a missile defense system. In no way does that diminish my commitment to making sure that Poland, the Czech Republic, and other NATO members are fully enjoying the partnership, the alliance, and U.S. support with respect to their security.
A little earlier, I spoke to Oldřich Bureš, a specialist on Russia and security issues, and asked him what he thought might be the future of the defense shield.
In terms of the American-Russian relations, I think the radar will be more of a bargaining chip than under Bush. If indeed there can be, for example, progress on Iran, which is presented as one of the key explanations why we actually need the missiles and the radar, probably there will be a lot of consideration in Washington and in Pentagon whether to invest such amounts of money in this pretty expensive system, especially given the extent of the financial and economic crisis.
Mr. Obama has never openly committed to missile defense, saying even before he was elected that it would first need to be proven before it was put into operation. After his swearing in, it then became apparent the U.S. president might be willing to drop missile defense in Europe in exchange for an extensive nuclear arms reduction deal with Russia. And now this. Proposed cooperation on forestalling Iran's nuclear ambitions, which many, including former politicians like Henry Kissinger, have stressed should not be underestimated. On the other hand, Petr Karatochvil of Prague's Institute of International Relations questions how much the planned radar in the Czech Republic and rockets in Poland are, or were, really about Iran at all.
Well, I think that there are more objectives in the American strategy, but obviously the main one, or at least the one which is perceived as the most important one in the Czech Republic, even though it's not publicly stated, is obviously that the missile defense should protect us from Russia, not from Iran. That's, I think, quite plain and obvious. We can see that even the American administration really couples the issue to the question of U.S.-Russian relations, not to the questions of Iran and the security. Definitely the main reason for the missile defense in Europe is strengthening the American presence here and diminishing the influence of Russia.
Such a presence would indeed be the last word on which sphere of influence the Czech Republic is in, and would also calm the current Czech government, which has invested a great deal of political capital in the project. The Americans, however, are, in the words of Vice President Joe Biden, pressing the reset button on U.S.-Russian relations, something Mr. Obama may himself address when he gives a key speech in the Czech capital next month.
Christian Falvey with that report. Tell us what you think. Should Barack Obama press the reset button in relations with Russia? Do we need a missile defense shield? Write and tell us. English@radio.cz. The Supreme Administrative Court on Wednesday rejected a petition by the Czech government to ban the far-right Workers' Party. The court said the cabinet had not provided sufficient evidence that the small extremist group, which first made headlines last year when its supporters staged a march on a Romani ghetto, posed a real threat to democracy. The verdict was applauded by the party, but probably by few others. The Czech government will now have to bring more proof to support its position or come up with different ways of dealing with right-wing extremism. Jan Richter reports.
When presiding judge Wojciech Szymiczek of the Supreme Administrative Court read the verdict refusing to ban the extremist Workers' Party on Wednesday, its supporters applauded and unraveled a party banner right in the courtroom. It took the judge more than 1 hour to justify the ruling, but the reasoning was simple enough. The government had failed to provide sufficient evidence that the far-right grouping posed a genuine threat to democracy. Judge Szymiczek had this to say.
The government produced no evidence of the radicalization of the party's activities with the ultimate goal of seizing power through non-democratic means or of its violation of the Right to Assembly Act. The proceedings before this court did not show that the Workers' Party's activities as documented by the government provide reasons to dissolve it. The Workers' Party made international news in November, when several hundred neo-Nazi skinheads, party sympathizers, staged a march in a Romani ghetto in the northern town of Litvinov, an attempt that ended in a pitched battle with the police. The government responded by petitioning the Supreme Administrative Court to ban the party. But Wednesday's verdict gave the party members a reason to celebrate. Tomáš Málek is the head of the Workers' Party Brno branch.
No, there's not going to be any march today. We'll just go and get together somewhere to talk things over. We're extremely happy with the verdict, but we were sort of counting on it. The government's proposal was based on absolutely irrelevant arguments, so we were very confident.
The verdict is a major setback for the government in its stance on extremism. While the Workers' Party is relatively small, with some 600 members, its activities have gained a certain momentum. In 2006, the party won 3 seats on 2 municipal councils. The party's strategy is straightforward, offering hardline approaches to growing racial tensions with the country's Romani minority. Miroslav Mareš is an expert on extremism at Brno's Masaryk University.
I think that there is no evidence about a really serious threat of Workers' Party to democracy. So I think that the main problem is now to find evidence that concrete members of Workers' Party are involved in violent or in neo-Nazi activities.
The party can now enjoy its victory and all the media attention. If the government hopes to crack down on them in the future, it will have to come back with solid evidence. Or it can try and deprive the party of support by moving racial tension and other social issues much higher up on its list of priorities.
Jan Richter reporting there on failed attempts to ban the far-right Workers' Party. Many in the Czech medical profession were unpleasantly surprised by recent comments by the head of the Czech Doctors Association, Milan Kubek. Speaking before a parliamentary committee on problems in healthcare, the head of the association suggested that work done by female doctors was incomparable to that done by their male counterparts. His words have since led to growing criticism and calls for him to step down. Jan Wellinger has more.
If Milan Kubek has any regrets in his choice of words regarding female doctors, he isn't showing it, at least not yet. Until now, he appears to have stood by an assertion that women doctors' work commitment was incomparable to men's, given women often have to take care of children at home. Mr. Kubek made the assertion in a recent presentation called The Lack of Doctors in the Czech Republic, made before the Health Committee in the Chamber of Deputies, pointing to the growing feminization in healthcare as a serious problem. Almost 53% of the country's doctors are women, many of whom were angered by Mr. Kubek's words. Here's what he told the lower house's health committee on February 25th.
Women's assignments, because they have 2 roles, one in the workplace and one at home taking care of the children, can understandably never be compared to those of men.
Mladá Fronta Dnes ran a front-page story on the presentation as well as the reaction, including calls for Mr. Kubek to give up his post. But the story also drew quick protest. The Czech Doctors Association, under its vice president, said that the paper had distorted the facts, arguing Mr. Kubek did not say that female doctors were worse than their male counterparts. For some perspective, I spoke to Czech-American physician Martin Jan Stransky.
On the one hand, I think I know what he wanted to say in the fact that the activity of female physicians in the physician labor force is influenced by other considerations, such as their bringing up children and so on, which of course is natural and it's fine, and as it should be. But unfortunately, what he said came out to mean that that their work capacity, meaning even that their capacity as physicians is inadequate as compared to male physicians. And that, of course, is a tragic statement. At the end of the day, in any balanced country, the director of the physicians' union would be forced to resign unless he issued a retraction.
Another in the medical profession taken aback by Mr. Kubek's comments was Civic Democrat MP Dagmar Molendová, present at Mr. Kubek's speech.
When he said that female doctors were also mothers and couldn't do the same amount of work, I felt wronged. I'm both. For 20 years I worked in the field and I think I did a similar number of shifts to my male colleagues. In this case, I think the head of the Doctors Association went a little too far.
Clearly Mr. Kubek himself doesn't think so, otherwise he might have issued an apology by now. His refusal to do so has shocked some in the medical profession even more.
And thanks to Jan Wellinger for that report. You're listening to Radio Prague, the English service of Czech Radio. On Sunday, we received news of the death of Wing Commander Petr Oruba, a former member of the 311th Czechoslovak Bomber Squadron during the Second World War. Wing Commander, or Colonel Oruba, fled his country shortly after the Nazi occupation in March 1939 and made his way to Britain, where he joined the Royal Air Force, flying bombing missions over occupied Europe. He was taken prisoner after being forced to land in occupied France and was sent to the notorious Colditz prison camp. After 1948, he, along with all other former RAF pilots, was persecuted by the communists and could only talk freely about his wartime experiences after 1989. About 7 years ago, I had the privilege of interviewing Mr. Oruba for Radio Prague and began by asking him whether flying had always been a passion.
Well, it is a passion, actually. Once you get into the air, you feel really free, and it's a sensation. So it is a passion.
You joined the Czechoslovak Air Force at the age of 18, 19, as a young man.
Yes.
Hundreds of Czechoslovak pilots fled Czechoslovakia in the months leading up to and yes. directly after the Nazi occupation. Many were made their way to Britain to join the RAF. Perhaps you can just tell me a bit about how your journey took place, how you got to Britain.
Yes, well, the occupation of our country in March, 15th March 1939, was such a shock for me that naturally we finished our service. We were sent back to our families and to our villages and towns. And Germans were more or less everywhere. I said, well, it's not a place for me to live in, because no freedom, you couldn't express yourself freely. So I said, I've got to get out of the country and to the free land.
Was it still, for you, a young man, a great adventure, or were you greatly depressed and sad about what had happened to your country?
More or less, it was a patriotic duty, and of course with the possibility of adventure. But the main idea was to get out of the occupied country and do something in the struggle which we had expected.
What's your first memory of arriving in Britain?
Yes, well, it was some big surprise when we left Bordeaux and arrived at Falmouth. There, we were offered first tea, British tea.
Did you like it?
Which is, oh yes, well, British
with
tea
milk?
Is the best. It's the best. No one can make the tea the way they do it in England or Great Britain. But as I said, the fighters were sent to bases and Duxford, which was actually base for British, for Royal Air Force fighters, and for the group of Czechs who arrived there. And after a very short time, they were put into the aerial combats. So we were really welcomed in Great Britain, and Royal Air Force did all they could to make use of our fighters. But we started first bombing the ports on the channel, because Germans were gathering their ships for the possible invasion. It was a silly idea, because the last invasion that was executed was William the Conqueror. There were the ships ready, and we bombed those ships, mostly landing crafts and so on. So that was our first effort, and that was within the Battle of Britain.
You were shot down and captured.
It was an error of the navigator, together with the wrong weather. When we were actually on a trip to Boulogne, which was across the channel, it was, but when flying back after we have bombed Boulogne, as we flew to the North Sea, the drift was such that we got back again over the channel, where we landed by mistake on the Normandy Peninsula near the town of Flers. So there we were taken prisoners.
And you spent some time, I hear, in the infamous Colditz. Colditz has been immortalised in many books and, of course, famous mm-hmm. Hollywood films. Tell me about the Colditz that you remember. What do you remember of your cell, of the discipline there?
We had, naturally, every morning and then in the afternoon, the roll call in the yard. That is something every prisoner has to obey. So I knew that as a prisoner of war, I have to annoy at least the German guards and so on. So my passive resistance was that I took the roll call in the morning, and I always was the last to run out when everybody was standing there, and the German warrant officer who was supervising, when he saw me, he said, "Ah, well, Uruba, immer der Letzte, Uruba, always the last."
Moving on to after the war, the fate of Czechoslovak airmen who risked their lives for freedom to liberate their country from the Nazis is a painful one. Those who chose to come back to Czechoslovakia after 1945 were thrown into prison by the communists. Many of them died there. They were tortured. What happened to you after the war?
Well, there was a surprise, really, because it was a coup d'etat in the classic way, really. And that was the end for us. They said, "You are those who were fighting, but on the wrong side. You were helping to win the war for the capitalists." Silly, because nearly all of us didn't come from rich families, but still, after a few months, we were all chased out from the forces. No chance for us.
And many sent to prison.
And sent to prison those who were active in a way.
Obviously, the story of what happened to Czechoslovak airmen was suppressed during the communist regime.
Yes.
Only after 1989 did it really come out how badly they were treated. Do you think there is enough awareness among people, especially younger people, of exactly what happened to you and your colleagues after 1948?
To tell the truth, young people are not interested, because it's been already, 50 years ago. They didn't live in the situation we had lived.
Does it make you sad when people forget, when you realise that people, how much people have forgotten?
No, I understand that they have other interests. If there was the need, and I hope there will never be need to do what we did. That's why I always was a strength supporter of joining the NATO.
Right, well, that's what I want to move on to. Prague has just hosted the first ever NATO summit in a post-communist country. I remember shortly before the Czech Republic joined the alliance, many people said, for this country, invaded by the Nazis in 1939, the Russians in 1968,
exactly,
there is simply no alternative to joining NATO to guarantee security in the future. Do you agree with that? And how much relevance does that have today?
Yes, to me it was clear after what we have witnessed, occupation by Germans, then again occupation by our allies and friends. So I went into a rage. I said, so we've got to get someone who has the power to help us or to guarantee the freedom. I saw that the only possibility is the large North Atlantic Treaty Organization. And I remember it was the United States forces that decided the First World War, when the warring forces here on European battlefields were exhausted. The American came and the last onslaught made the victory of Allies in the First World War. In the Second World War, again, you had the invasion in June 1944. They are still there, and they are ready to help us. They are there, always ready to help the old Europe.
Colonel Ruba, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Wing Commander Petr Uruba, who died on Sunday at the age of 92. And that interview was first broadcast in November 2002. And that's all we have time for today. So from me, Rob Cameron, and everyone here at Radio Prague, goodbye and take care.